Mr. Rayner Taylor, Reel 3. We were talking about the effects of the war on the work of Durban Mill.
Yeah.
You were saying that there were a lot, once you got the war orders in, there was a shortage of people. Did they employ women in jobs that they previously hadn't?
For the first time, women came into the spinning department. Usually, the work of women was in what's known as the card room. That's a preparation for the preparing of the cotton to come into the spinning room, because the spinning was rather more complicated.
Were these the machines you said that made it longer, the thread longer? Yeah.
Whereas where the women were, the machines that they had just spun it onto a bobbin. And then the bobbin were put onto our machines, so that and it was all a question of drawing it out further, you see.
So they just put it on the bobbin, you drew it out.
Yes.
I've got you. And they now came into the spinning
They became, the shortage of operatives in the spinning department, it enabled them to bring women in, something which they would never, ever dream of doing before the war.
Why wouldn't they dream of it?
Well, it wasn't considered suitable for women. For one thing, men wore very few clothes, and you undressed yourself. You undressed yourself where you worked, and you used to tie some string round a pillar and put a piece of wire and hook your clothes on there. And it wasn't considered suitable for women to come in, because you were either dressing or undressing you. But morals became a little slacker, and the women did come in.
What did they bring them in? Were they brought in as pieces, little pieces?
Yes, and what they called creelers, which put the bobbin onto the machine which made the spindles.
What were they called?
Creelers. C-R-E-E-L-E-R-S. Creelers. A creel was a frame which held the bobbin so that it would revolve.
Had you had to do that job at any time?
Previously. Well, yes, it was part and parcel of your job. But because of the shortage, they brought women in to do that job, and it released men and boys to go on the...
To do the more skillful thing. This is when you became a big piece.
Yes, so yeah.
So what were the women like as little pieces?
Well, as a type, and I think in the main, and I don't think I'm being unfair to them, they were rather of a rougher element. You know, there are some places, I don't know whether I should say this, but there are some places that you seem to get a tougher type of person lives in. And it's same here. They used to come from out districts, you know. But girls in your own area, they would never dream of it. It would be beneath their dignity to do that, you know.
So these women that came in, did they do a good job?
Yes. They did a very good job. Very good indeed.
Were they as good as the men had been?
Yes.
Did everybody think that?
Unless they'd have to be very, very biased. If they didn't think it, they wouldn't get one to do it. If they didn't get one to do it, they couldn't. Nobody would do.
Now, when these women were brought in, you say they were slightly rougher
than
some of the local girls. How did that affect some of the younger factory lads?
Well, you can just imagine it affected them. Oh, yes, it got rather... Some of them got rather raunchy, you know.
Were you embarrassed at all? Because you'd had a fairly sheltered upbringing, hadn't you, in a sense?
At first, but afterwards, bother at all afterwards. Familiarity, contempt, you know.
Did you get on well with them?
Oh, yes. In the main.
Did it cause any trouble at all, the bringing in
of women? In lots of cases, yes.
In what way?
Quite a lot of them got pregnant, you know, and all sorts of things like that, you know.
But not on the work level. It was more the social level.
Oh, yes. Well, they made it social because they'd meet them afterwards. And The chance of any hanky panky at work was minimal because it's a big open plain. Everybody could see everybody.
What I meant was that the trouble that came from women being there came from social things. Not from their way they
work. Not from the work. No.
Did they join the union?
The women didn't. No.
Were they not allowed to?
Well, I don't think so. Although I've never even thought about that. But I've no recollection of women ever joining the union. I don't think they did.
Now, besides the shortage, first you were put on short time, and then when the orders came in, there was plenty of work and the women came in. Yeah. What other effects did the war have on the factory? Do you remember any other ways it affected life and your work?
Well, wages went up. Oh, yes, wages went up.
How much?
Not a great lot, but it was substantial by their standards. And, it affected me in many, many ways. I can't mention anything particularly, but it did make a vast difference.
Did people carry on leaving to go to the war?
Yes.
1914 went on into 16 and 15.
You see, Lord Derby...
Ah, that's since 16. I mean, before that. Were people still volunteering?
They were still volunteering. They formed a... there was a local territorial battalion, which was made up to full strength very quickly. And then a reserve battalion was formed in the local territorials. And that was made up. That was first lot was the 10th Manchester, 10th Battalion, and then the next lot would be the 2nd, 10th would be the Reserve Battalion, and so it went on.
Were you ever tempted before 16? Were you ever tempted to try and get in, or were you still too small?
I was always afraid that the war would be over before I did get in. I was afraid, although, mind you. Size for size, I wasn't a midget by everyday standards. I was about average, but when I think back, we were poor lot of creatures.
You mean you weren't very well built?
No. But I seemed to be average.
Was your health all right before you went in the army?
Yes, reasonable. Reasonable. I can't recall having had any serious illnesses.
Did the war affect your life at home, before you went in, much?
I think it began to affect us more after the first lad went in. I think it began to affect us more then.
Which one was that?
That was the middle one, Albert, he recalled.
When did he join up?
He joined up in, I think it was September, 1914.
And who did he join?
He joined the East Lancashire Regiment. And the pay was a shilling a day. That was a soldier's pay then, and it was a shilling for a long, long time. Now, when a man joined the army, he could allocate a certain amount of his wage to his dependents. If a man was married, he allotted it to his wife. If he wasn't, he allotted it to his mother. If he wanted, and invariably you wanted, because you were usually told you had to do. So that you will allot sixpence of your shilling a day. You draw 3 and 6 months a week instead of 7 shillings.
And Albert did that, did he?
Albert did that. Now, the government added some to this 3 and 6 months to make up for his absence from home. So, mother drew that 3 and 6 months and plus. Yeah, she drew that. So, in some ways, they were better off because she'd have to keep him. And she was drawing money. Although we never thought of it in that respect, you know.
Did you worry about Albert?
Oh, at first, yes. And then when casualties began to... were proud, very, very proud indeed, when he went to France, you know. Oh, yes, he was one of the very first that came on leave in this area. Oh, and I well remember it.
What do you remember about it? Can you tell us about
it? Yes. It was in the summertime. It must have been summertime because we were in bed. And a knock on the door. And we slept in the back room, my mother and father in the front room. And my dad gets up to look through the window. And I could hear him now shout, "It's our Albert!" And there's... Oh, he's on leave from France. If you'd have seen him, he'd clear up to the eyeballs. Just come out of the trenches. Came right out of the trenches. And when he came on leave from France, you brought everything that you possessed. You brought home everything that you owned, including your rifle. And he stood... we all jumped out of bed, ran into the front room to... And mind you, in those days, the working class people... Very, very few people wore pyjamas. Very few indeed. My father didn't. And we all stood looking through the window on our shirts, looking through the window, Albert. My mother says, "Well, go let him in." And my dad went downstairs, through the lobby, and opened the front door, still in his shirt. He did. And then we all trooped downstairs and, what they call it, euphoria. For goodness gracious. Here's a lad come right out of trenches. Something that we'd never seen. You'd seen pictures, never seen. And he was one of the first that came on leave in this area. Caused a sensation, I might tell you. Because when people knew... Albert Taylor would come everywhere to see him as if he was a museum piece, which he really was, you know, at that time. Oh, and I can remember before I went to work, I was ready for going to work, and I stood holding his rifle so I could stick to his rifle before I went to work, and I ran all the way to work to tell them how Albert had come home. And after breakfast, we had a cousin lived, worked at the same building as us. And after breakfast, our Albert, he came to the mill. They were stopping work to come and have a look at him. Out of the trenches. I don't think I've ever experienced anything quite like that. It became more common afterwards, but this was one of the first.
This would be the summer of 15, right?
Yes.
1915. And what? I mean, you've described a bit of the reaction. Did that carry on with him? I mean, how long was he back for? A week?
Yes, a week.
And it carried on like that, did it?
Oh yeah. After he went back again, you know.
Did he have any problem with lice when he came home? Did he have to do anything like that?
Absolutely lousy. What happened was my mother. And all working class people, then they had what they call set boilers. It was a big boiler set in a brick foundation, and they put a fire under it, and they boiled the clothes in that. Well, what my mother did, she got all his clothes, his underclothes, and stuck them all in this boiler. And boiled them. And his, we thought, terrible. It's like, how Albert lousy. Little did we know, everybody else was. And at that time, they actually had an iron that used to heat the heaters. They used to heat them on the fire. And they'd pick them out and drop them in an iron and use them for the iron. And he told her what to do. He turned his trousers inside out, and with a hot iron, as hot as he could, they ironed up the seams to kill all the lice. And same with his jacket. And that became standard practice when an Elvis came home, you know. It happened to all of us eventually, but that was the first anybody had known of lice, you know, because lice was a terrible problem.
Had he changed at all from his... He'd been on the front?
Yes, he'd grown up. He had grown up, you know. Of course, we wanted to know what he was like, and he brought any souvenirs, oh, yeah. And he had. He brought the spike, the brass spike off a German helmet. This was before the days of the steel helmets, you know. And quite long, which we thought it was... Well, anything that he brought off the battlefield, we thought was wonderful.
Oh, did he tell you what it was like? Did you understand what it was like?
No, he didn't. There was no such thing as him glorifying it or making it so horrible. He just told us as it was, you know. But we tended to glorify it, you know. In those days, trench warfare was just starting, you know, and. Became the story of digging in and things like that, you know. But every little thing that he could tell us was wonderful, you know. Oh, yes, he did cause a sensation when he came home.
Had you written to him? Did you write to him?
No, my mother always wrote.
You didn't?
Oh, no. My mother always wrote, and she did it. There was three of us in the army at one time, you know.
I'll come back. These early days, she wrote to him, would he write back?
Oh, yes. But he wasn't a good communicator. You could say, when he got a letter from him, you could say three parts of it were standard things that he'd said in his last letter.
What sort of things?
Dear mother and father, pleased to say I'm all right, and I'm getting on all right, and... And then he met somebody. There were one or two people in the same unit, and they'd say, "Bill McKee's all right." And it's very short letters. I think you were the worst of us.
And would you have enough money to send him a parcel?
My mother did. My mother, very particular. My mother about if she baked, she'd make a cake. She saved little things, and they used to send them in tins. And I know of this because this was before I went, you know. And then she'd cover it with cloth and sew it all round. And they print his address on. And they put it funny enough. I can remember an address from 1915. His address.
What was it?
Private A. Taylor, A Company, 7th Battalion, East Lancashire Regiment, British Expeditionary Force, France. Think about that. And that was the address. I know it because they used to... I could see it on the parcel. We used to take the parcel. You used to have to go to the post office. And I know what those parcels must have meant to him. I know what they meant to me. Yeah.
Now, when were you the next brother to join?
No, I had another brother who was older than Albert.
Who was he? What was his name?
His name was Jack.
And when did he join up?
Well,
roughly.
Early 1915. Early.
Now, what made him join up then?
Well, I'll tell you why. He was a member of St. John's Ambulance. And a detachment used to train down the road. And they all joined up as one unit. And they were sent to the Marines, the Naval Division. So they became... he was a Marine. RND, Royal Naval Division. Now, he went to train at Blandford in Dorset. Now, he never came home at all on leave or anything like that, you know. He did some training at Blandford, and then immediately went out. Gallipoli. He went out with the Marines to Gallipoli, and he landed at Gallipoli on the 25th of April, along with the first landings. And, of course, he stayed there until they evacuated. He got wounded there, too, but didn't come away, you know. They sent him away.
How did your mother react, having two of her lads away?
I must get round to that about my mother's reaction. I must do that. I try to think now of my children. I wonder how they would react if one of theirs were going. I just wonder. So, he said, well, you wonder how would your mother react? Pretty shattering, you know. But when it came to be three, then of course, it was my mother. She coped until the war finished. She died just afterwards. And do you know why I think she died? During the war. Now, casualties were always notified by telegram. Always by telegram. And as the war went on, the sight of a telegram boy on the road, it frightened everybody to death. They used to stop and look which street he was going. He used to come on a bike. And everybody would stop. Where was this telegram boy going? Because you knew something happened. Do you remember the time he came to our house? Ten. I would just try and think about that. 10 times. Our Albert got wounded 4 times. Our Jack got wounded 3 times. I was wounded 2, but one weren't as bad as this. Now, 10 times, a knock on the door, and invariably it was my mother go, because it'd be during the day and it had to be at work. You go to the door, telegram boy, and she knows that something happened. It's, words can't describe what she must have felt. To open the telegram, find out that they were only wounded. Until the last telegram she got was our Albert. He was missing, believed to be killed, and that was the last one they got.
When was that?
That was 18.
Right at the end of the war.
And they never heard again. Never heard from him. Well, in fact, we'd all given him up as dead, you know. Even me and our Jack, who were in the army, we thought, no chance. And this platoon officer said he did. We couldn't hold much hope for being alive. But my mother wouldn't give way. No. No, she wouldn't give way at all. Not dead. And if only enough, she was bolstered by spiritualism. Now, it's a strange thing, that, but she was. She said she'd go to these a meeting, and she'd come back and say she'd had a test. I don't remember test. And they'd name somebody which she would identify with. Well, probably other people would do the same thing, you know, but she did. And she came back one time and even said they told her that he was a prisoner somewhere in Holland. And my dad told us this story about him. he wrote it down, what she'd said, and we had a, in the front room, we had a roll-top desk, and he stuck it in one of the drawers. Anyway, the war finished. Well, the Saturday, I was in hospital having this thing finished with. Our Jack wasn't home. Mother went to the door, and there's our Albert at the door. Never heard of him for months. Thought he were dead. He was in German uniform. They'd opened the floodgates, and they opened the prison gates, and they made their way across country as they were, as they stood. And that's why it's through that that they learned the lesson of repatriation for this war. It didn't happen in the next war, you know. They released prison camps, and they flew food and clothing in right away. Really like the first, you know. But they were learning then. But just imagine, that's a family who had 10 notifications.
And you think the stress was part of the reason? What? How did she die? Was it flu?
Well, yes, flu. That Asian flu. And she couldn't cope, you know. She wasn't big. She went to a little old lady, you know. She lived long enough to see us home, and that was it.
Did all the brothers end up in the army?
3 brothers, yes.
And one didn't?
One didn't. One was too young.
What about your sister? Did she have anything to do with war work?
No, no. She was younger still.
Did you have any feelings about people who were actually conscientious objectors before?
I never knew a conscientious objector. No, I never knew one.
Was there any industrial trouble at your works?
Not
that
I know. Not during the war. No.
Did you join the Derby scheme at all when that came in 1916?
No. I was conscripted right into the.
How did you feel about conscription? Was it?
I welcomed it because I thought I wouldn't be able. I wouldn't get in otherwise.
Why did you think you wouldn't get in?
Well, I didn't think I was big enough, or I didn't. I don't know. I was just afraid I wouldn't get in. I so desperately wanted to get in.
Even after you'd seen the casualty figures?
Oh, yes. Funny, the casualty figures, they didn't seem to register then as they do now. You know, people seemed to accept them. They were terrible. But people accepted them.
And it didn't put you off?
No way.